I am Scotty Nell Hughes, and on this week's 360 View, they say with age comes great wisdom, but could it also come with the risk of a world leader suffering from dementia? Meanwhile, countries around the world are dealing with major groups of displaced migrants from embattled areas descending upon them. But is the influx putting their own economy at risk? Let's get started. The median age of the current class of world leaders is 62, with the youngest known head of government being Gabriel Boric of Chile, who rules at the age of 38. Meanwhile, oddly, those countries who are considered to be more of a free society tend to elect younger leadership. But one country defies the trend and is looking to elect its next leader at the ripe age of 79 or 81. Of course, I'm talking about the United States. And while the United States Constitution prefaces the minimum age of 35 to be president, I guess it did not occur to James Madison, otherwise known as the father of the Constitution, there should be a maximum age as well. Now, maybe it's because the age of the men who were involved in founding America did so mainly in their 20s and 30s, and most during that time didn't even live past 60. But after the last two administrations have been plagued with gaffes and stumbles, is it fair to attribute this to age? Well, let's bring in our panel. Steve Gill, who's a political analyst and radio host, legal and media analyst Lionel, as well as Steve Malzberg, who is a talk radio host and conservative commentator. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen.
Thanks, Scotty.
I want to start with you, Lionel, on this, because before we get to the current slate of candidates, is it fair to even question the mental capabilities of the president of the United States based on his age alone?
Yes, that is absurd. Age alone? Absolutely not. What's important is capacity. That's what the 25th Amendment is for. Look, we have a guy in Pennsylvania right now, a senator, John Fetterman, who is theoretically, chronologically, young. But he's walking around yelling, "Who ordered the veal cutlet?" So if you want to look at age, Mick Jagger's in his 80s. Alan Dershowitz is 85. This doesn't make any sense. We're close, but it's not about age. And if you want to talk about age, let's talk about immaturity. And by the way, do you want to also take into account mental ability, depression, drinking, abuse of drugs? Let me just say something very quickly. I don't want anybody coming along with a new way to get rid of elected officials based upon this idea that we have to make sure they are, mentally competent, because one man's competence is another man's elimination unfairly and unconstitutionally.
Well, that's funny because Steve Malzberg, Lionel brings up maturity. I think maturity is not a factor that elects people to Congress if you look at our current slate. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that on the other end of the scale. Yeah, but if we're talking about an age limit as opposed to a minimum or mature when you get in, look, I always say when I talk about Joe Biden and his total incompetency, his inability to leave a stage and know where he's going or to say goodbye or to shake a hand or anything, anything that is involved with falling down, God bless him. It's not his fault that he's old and he's aging as he's aging. Donald Trump, on the other hand, for one, more gracefully. You see a lot of people in their 70s and, some in their 80s that could have a conversation, that know what they're doing. So it all depends on the person. But the fact that Joe Biden at this point says he's going to run again and be the nominee and that's what the plan is, I blame his family. To me, it's elder abuse. It's country abuse, but it's elder abuse. Let this guy enjoy the rest of his life. Get him out of here and let him go sit in Delaware on the beach and look at, whatever he looks at. I don't want to say.
Well, Steve Gill, I have to ask you, do you think people are politically weaponizing age only to hurt their opposition?
I think only in this particular case, and I don't think it's really about a number as much as it's about his competency. This is a guy who walks around shuffling like I used to do when my kids were young, and there'd be Legos strewn all over the living room floor, and I'm walking around in the dark of night, can't see, and I'm trying to shuffle around so I don't step on Legos. That's how he walks. It's his competency that is the problem. Worse than that, it's his policies that are the problem. And I think sometimes his age and the infirmities distract from the fact that his policies are even worse than his incapacity to govern.
Because I almost feel like they're using it as an excuse. Well, he's allowed, to a certain extent, it's the reverse. It's because of his age. But I do want to look at specifics, because looking at old footage of both Joe Biden as a senator, or even when he debated Paul Ryan, you can tell there is a significant change to the man being guided by the First Lady, who's tripping down the stairs or making odd comments.
Where's Deborah? This year, I just had my picture taken with her. That's probably why she left. No, all kidding aside. Anyway, she couldn't be here, actually. That's not true. I got it mixed up. And she has, she fights very hard for the people of this district, and she's up in Washington right now.
But you cannot negate. You've got Donald Trump, who was well-spoken and eloquent on his appearance on Oprah in 1988. Compared to today, when his staff, and depending on the situation, the company kind of holds their breath when he goes off the teleprompter.
By the way, they never report the crowd on January 6th. You know, Nikki Haley, they destroyed all of the information, all of the evidence, everything, deleted and destroyed all of it, because of lots of things. Like, Nikki Haley is in charge of security. We offered her 10,000 people.
Should we be concerned about the two front runners and if they are physically and mentally able to handle their role because of, and we said competency, but their age? Malzberg.
Well, I think Donald Trump has, always gone off the teleprompter. I remember when he bought a USFL team in the 80s is when I first met him, and he was going off the teleprompter then. Look, the left in the media is making an issue now. Every time Donald Trump slips up verbally in the slightest bit, and he has mistakenly said this or that, they say, who's the one with dementia? Oh, who's incompetent? But it's like this compared to the height of the Empire State Building when you compare Trump to Joe Biden. And look, physically and mentally, Joe Biden is incapable of handling the job, again, because of his age. Now, you talk about competency. Kamala Harris, in my view, is incapable of handling the job because of her mental capacity. There's something going on there. So there's various reasons for mental incapacity or not having the ability to carry out the position. But in the case of age, Biden is disqualified. Trump, not yet.
Not yet. Lionel, though, you look at the 25th Amendment. I think you were the one that brought it up. You know, is this not a reason why you look at why we have in place these type of, like I say, they're like emergency exits when you get yourself in that situation? Do you ever partake that we could use something like that? I think it is the 25th Amendment to get someone like Joe Biden out of office.
This scares me. Joe Biden was elected. There are people who like him, with all due respect. With the exception of my good friend Steve, and I kid, of course, who the hell are we to talk about who's competent or not? Let's face it, we don't like Joe Biden. But if it was Donald Trump, we'd say, well, that's just the way he is. Look, remember during a George W. Bush, he was talking about putting food on your family, and he didn't know what he was saying. And he thought he had Wernicke's area encephalopathy. They thought he was a dry drunk. It was years of, we did it then. There was a book called Bush on the Couch. Listen, I am not going to hold out for the next Niels Bohr to be the president. But there comes a point when we've got to be very, very careful, and you've got to ask yourself, did we jump in during Woodrow Wilson after the multiple strokes? Did we jump in when Jack Kennedy was addicted to methamphetamine or whatever he was, when he had Addison syndrome, when Ike had multiple heart attacks? We've got to be really, really careful. And let me just tell you one thing. If the Republican Party doesn't win against this sock puppet, okay, let me just say this. It will be, they better win. I could put up a potted plant and beat him in a debate. And let me also tell you something. The way we're learning from the other night and from whatever, this MAGA GOP tidal wave, it's not there. So the question of sanity that I want to talk about is not Joe Biden's, but the American electorate. What the hell's going on here? What will it take? Does this man have to flatline? Ask most Democrats and they'll say, oh, you know, I think he's okay. I think it's a testament about us. I think we're the ones who need help.
Let me disagree just a bit, Lionel. I think the reason we didn't see this same kind of discussion when it came to Kennedy and the others, we didn't have 24-hour news channels. We didn't have video coverage 24 hours a day on these guys where every little gaffe, and if you're having a camera following you around 24 hours a day and you're 25 years old, you're going to muddle your words at some point, but that's not going to make news like it is when you're a president.
That was a joke. That's a great point. Look at FDR. FDR made a joke. I mean, made a rule. Anybody who dares mention the polio, you'll never travel with him again. And he was one of the most, you know, eloquent and perfect presidents. That's a great point.
And the media didn't cover it. And the media didn't cover his infirmities.
Lionel, you know, the poll, if I may, Scotty, just quickly, the polls show that the public, almost 70%. The recent one I just saw talked about thinks that Joe Biden it doesn't have the physical strength, the mental capability and stamina to be president of the United States. So the American public believes that.
But here's the thing. Is this a smart, and I'll let you, Lionel, comment on this. Is this a smart route for either party to go into, considering senior citizens are probably one of the largest voting blocks that come out on election day? I mean, they're going to take it personal. If you're going against somebody that they like just because of their age or they say, they're going to take that personal. Lionel.
You mentioned, you know, Steve brings up a good point. 70% of the population thinks that Joe Biden is basically non-compos mentis, yet 5% of the people vote. So what I'm going to say is we talk about this as though there is this absolute referendum that he is out of his mind. Listen, let me go back. At the height of it, when he got his 200 million votes or whatever it was, Joe Biden was talking about this mythical character named Corn Pop and his blonde hair and the wig in the pool and a switchblade and that didn't do it. And that's when he was at his peak.
Okay, but Lionel, you and I know that. Scotty knows that. Steve knows that. But you know what? The American public doesn't, because the media, the regular media that the regular public of the majority is exposed to, they didn't tell you that. They didn't tell you during the 2020 campaign that in 88, Biden was forced out of the campaign for lying, for plagiarizing, for cheating in law school that came to light. They didn't tell you any of that. So you and I know that, Scotty knows that, the panel knows that, but the people don't.
But to Steve's point, there's been a turning of the page, I think, in the media where they weren't talking about his age just a few months ago or a few weeks ago. All of a sudden, it's like the spigot's been turned on, and all of a sudden, Joe's age is being talked about by Democrats and by his media allies. They've decided he needs to go because they don't think he can win against Donald Trump.
Okay, listen, panel.
Are you kidding me?
He is not kidding him, but we're going to continue this conversation and tell you why, because I'm going to keep our panel right here, because after the break, we're going to look at the recent run on the border and debate if the influx of immigrants should actually be considered a boost or is it really a drain on the economy? Stick around. Welcome back. I'm Skynell Hughes, and you are watching the 360 View. Now, illegal border crossings seem to be a major issue most developed countries around the globe are now facing. This is causing much debate amongst citizens who want to have compassion for those seeking a safe place. However, with the growing economic strain put on the communities, the impact, some say, is turning from a mission of aid to a complete crisis. Sadly, many of the countries facing an immigration crisis in their own homeland are those causing the conflict or the bad environment driving the migration in another? Something about this doesn't seem right. And the politicians in charge of these countries have turned the issue into a very valuable talking point to rally their own base. Meanwhile, no political side wants to see a solution be implemented as the problem serves their own selfish purposes. But with more than 10.2 million undocumented immigrants living in the United States alone currently, proponents for a pathway to citizenship say it would add close to $1.7 trillion to the American economy if granted. However, there's no doubt communities are feeling an economic pinch and in some cases strangled by the influx of illegals who are now looking to the government and really the taxpayers for housing, healthcare, education, and more. So what is the answer? Well, let's bring in our panel. Political analyst and radio host Steve Gill, legal and media analyst Lionel, and conservative commentator and talk radio host Steve Malzberg. Thank you so much for joining us. And I know this seems like a simple question, but it's really not when you look at the overall economy. So Steve Gill, are countries looking at illegals crossing our border as an asset or as a burden?
Well, I think it depends on your perspective. You've got Democrats looking at them as a potential future voting asset. You're looking at employers thinking they can get low wage laborers, and you got taxpayers who are paying the bill. You've got crime that's rising in our communities. You know, we keep being told that all of the illegals that are coming in are not bad people. They're not criminals. They're not rapists and murderers and terrorists. And that's absolutely true. But if I give you a big bowl of M&Ms and tell you, look, out of the hundreds of M&Ms there's only three or four that are poisoned. Do you scoop up a handful and put it in your mouth or recognize they are a danger and we ought to be identifying the danger and doing something about it?
Malzberg, I think I know your answer on this, but do you agree with Steve's assessment that we still have to watch what's coming across?
Look, I think now more than ever, we have our Homeland Security Director testifying before Congress and can't answer or won't answer the question, how many suspected terrorists have come in to this country through the border? How many do you know came in, and how many of them do you know where they are? And this man won't give one single answer. This at a time when the FBI director testifies and says, we're in bigger trouble now. The threat of terrorism here domestically from people from the outside, Hamas has people here, Hezbollah could have people here. The threat is bigger than ever. That alone should say, end this crap. Enough with the illegal immigration. And by the way, the money that Joe Biden wants in this budget package with aid to Israel, aid to Ukraine, aid to Taiwan, and to for the border, it's just to fly the illegals around once they cross in illegally and take them to whatever city they want to go to. And then in 3 years, they have their hearing, like they're going to show up, the majority of them. So that's not, it's like he's not building a wall. He's not going to enforce the border. He's going to accommodate the illegals. So this is insanity, and it's been going on forever. And until Republicans control the House, the Senate with 60-vote majority, and the presidency, it's going to continue to go on.
But Lionel, the Republicans did have the House, the Senate, and the White House, and they did not do anything about it. So is that really the solution, is making sure that the Republicans are in power?
How is this even a Republican or a Democratic issue? I'm in New York City. Let me take you on a tour. I don't mean to particular point. We'll go outside the door, and you will swear you're in the middle of, I don't know where, Venezuela, Guadalajara. I don't know what's going on. You see these very nice people with nice shoes and backpacks walking around like, what the hell is this? They're dumped off. They're crowded into hotels. They're walking around. We don't know who they are. We don't know where they're going. And here's the best part. Teachers who are in schools get the knock on the door, and they'll say, yes, Mrs. Hughes, yes. This is little Guadalupe or Vicente. Here, they're from, I don't know, somebody. Here you go. And nobody knows. Then we have, here's the best one, unaccompanied minors, sex trafficking, little kids and girls being sold into trafficking, into slavery, and we don't know who they are. And here's the best part, we're debating it. This is actually subject to debate. The heavens haven't opened, and God hasn't said, oh, no, you don't. This defies logic, common sense. And here's the best part. Nothing has been done to fix it. nothing.
Nothing.
Brother. With all this.
With everything going on. But Lionel, is that on purpose? But I got to start. You know, Gil, this also is happening not only in the United States, but it's also happening around the world. Does a country have a right to secure their own borders without international intervention? And why do we see pressure when some pressures, when no country was going to accept refugees from Gaza, even Egypt shut it down? There wasn't this outcry, but if America tries to do anything to their borders, you get this international outcry. Does the country have a right to protect their own borders or handle their own?
Absolutely. That's the first right they have. And by the way, did you notice that there was a wall between Gaza and Egypt, and they were controlling the gate, so only people they wanted to let go through could get through? You look at some of these other countries around the world, they have much better barriers than we have. We don't even have a speed bump on our border, which is why millions and millions are coming across. Now, to Lionel's point, it wasn't a problem in sanctuary cities like Chicago and New York and L.A. and San Francisco until they started showing up there. They didn't mind them being in South Texas and New Mexico and Arizona. But by gosh, don't let them come to New York or, for God's sake, Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
Watch it.
Lionel, are you particular to Martha's Vineyard? But is that part of the problem? Is why did it seem like some countries get away with saying no to refugees while others are subjected to global pressure to allow and care for those illegally in their country?
I have no idea where this kumbaya business came through. But let me throw another little scenario, and I think, Steve, you got it right. The idea that these people are going to come in here and they're going to say, oh, by the way, welcome to this country. Here's your goodie bag. Now, you're going to vote Democrat. Let's get an iris scan on you. We're always going to know where you are. And one of these days, we're going to come and pick you up and put you in a bus and take you to Duluth, Minnesota, because we may want to kind of fudge the population around because censuses are coming back. But you're going to always be a Democrat, correct? You got that? Oh, yes. And if you think that the government, that this government cares at all about humanity, remember, the government never does anything to help you. The government does not care about you. When the government says they put fluoride in the water, they don't care about your teeth. They don't care about anything. It's for themselves. And here's the best part, as everybody brings up, the idea that we have to even explain or justify border sovereignty, this is sovereignty burglary. This is the primary, the most basic understanding of sovereignty. It's basically having a limit to who comes in and who comes out. And again, the fact that we're even debating this still is just a testament of how we as a society have lost our minds.
Steve Malzberg.
But it is a Democrat-Republican thing because, yeah, the Democrat mayors and Democrat voters now in these sanctuary cities are saying, what the heck? And they're pissed off. But the Democrat senators aren't doing anything. They're not moving. They're not saying, yeah, you know, we really got to take care of this, because they wanted to continue for political reasons. One of them is, like Lionel said, they count on down the line, it'll be the Democrat votes. But it also takes away our from our culture. They're not going to adopt to our culture. It just makes everything a free-for-all, because the Democrat Party despises our culture. Barack Obama despises our country as it's always been. This is all part of just throw it all in and let it mix up and see and let the chips fall where they may. This cannot continue. And by the way, wait, you think people are outraged now? Wait until they say, hey, Joe, you know, you're living in a big house with three bedrooms and you live alone. You're going to have to take in, you know, we'll pay you $200 a person, a month, a week, but you're going to have to take in this family. You think that's far-fetched if the Democrats gain control of the Senate, the House, and the White House? Watch.
Well, and to Lionel's point, Lionel, they're not just dropping one in Minnesota. They dropped tens of thousands of Somalis in Minnesota who elected one of their own, the Ilan I Married My Brother Omar. They're dumping whole populations in who then elect one of their own, not an American, not somebody who has the, as Steve mentioned, cultural values or ambitions of being American. We've lost that melting pot of coming here wanting to be part of this country. They're coming here wanting to import their country.
Well, is that not the biggest difference between the present situation and the past? I mean, every single one of us on this panel today are a descendant, close descendants probably, of an immigrant who came here, some legal, some illegal. That's up to you to tell your family story. But so what has changed? Why America today can't take it anymore? What's the difference?
Well, for some reason, I don't know where this comes from. Yes, unless you're a Navajo or something. Yeah, you can't say that. But everybody that we knew, to an extent, understood that if we tried to go to any of the countries that are dropping people off here, and we wanted to reverse the operation. We wanted to go into Mexico or Venezuela. Good luck with that. There was a time, Scotty and friends, when we could not do anything. I couldn't get on a bus. I can go to a library unless I show them a vaccine pass and where would you get your booster and who are you? And let me see your ID. And I'm living in New York City where we have congestion pricing. If you drive 5 feet out of your door, you got to pay $25. I'm under constant and total surveillance and taxation for everything that I do. But if you drop me off in the middle of the night on one of these mysterious white buses that show up in Jersey and they end up here, no questions asked. Who are these people? What's their criminal record? What's their disease protocol? What are they festering and fungating under their, you know, cellular makeup? I mean, this is incredible. And where do you think these people are going? And one more thing. These folks don't want to be in New York City. Imagine you're in Caracas or Havana one minute, and then you're in Midtown, Times Square. They're freaking out. And here's the best part. They're abandoned. They're just abandoned. Here's your backpack, $20. See you later. And what happens when they get desperate? What happens when they start to freak out? What happens when they aren't able to cope? There's no assimilation process here. You're going to have multiple layers of new flavors of mental illness in languages, literally and figuratively, you've never even heard of before. Get ready and brace yourself.
But Malzberg, I got 1 minute left. I'm going to leave the last line to you. What do you say to those that say the United States caused, especially in South America, caused a lot of these people the discontent within their own communities? What do you say to them? You know what? You created this problem. Now you have to deal with it.
Tell them, Steve.
No, those countries, the countries that they're coming from, they're leaving. It has nothing to do with the United States. To me, that's a Kamala Harris line. It's our fault that the world is so awful. It's our fault that people, you know, have to leave those countries because of what we did to them, what we're doing to them, what we might do to them. That's baloney. They're coming here because there's an open door policy. They know they'll get in. They know, notwithstanding what Lionel accurately described, they believe they're going to have a better life. They believe they'll get everything for free. And that's why they're coming. And again, until we walls with no chance of anybody going under, going over, it's going to continue. And it just cannot. And we cannot survive as a country if this continues.
Well, at some point, it's probably going to become a revolving door as they realize it's not as great here as they have heard. And we'll probably just return back home, maybe. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today on our panel. This has been your 360 view of all of the important issues that are facing you. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes. Thanks for watching.